Welcome to Section 8, Computer Science E259. So why don't we start by doing a quick run through of the specs so that you know where to focus your attention on where you need not have comfort yet, and then we'll turn our attention to the code itself, and along the way please interject with any questions you might have. The most important thing on page 1 of the spec, to be honest, is to subscribe to the subscription ID so that you don't at the last minute run into issues with latency on Amazon's part. Essentially, as the spec does say in problem 11, you should sign up for what's essentially called a web services developer account with Amazon, so that you can, once we discuss web services next week, actually interface with Amazon's own web services. So that's one of the neat things about Project 4 is that you'll no longer be working in a sort of E259 vacuum, focusing only on code that we've written and requirements that we've laid out in the spec. You'll actually be integrating with an industry web service, namely Amazon's, which a good number of sites use. A lot of them, for instance, if you've ever gone to these third-party sites where Google sometimes tricks you into looking for a book you want to buy and you find it through some random guy's website just because he has links to Amazon's offerings and therefore he has click-through links via which he can make 1% or 2% of the transaction from Amazon. Well, you too can integrate with all of Amazon's data via web services and actually create your own website that lists reviews from customers of books and electronics and movies and so forth. They really give you an API with which to access all of the data in their database. And so you'll use that in Project 4 to actually add to Scamazon an actual web service. And so what it's meant to be is an opportunity to parlay some of the ideas and the concepts from the course into a real-world API so that when you exit the course, you feel that not only have you worked in our little safe environment and sandboxes of the projects, you've actually taken these ideas and skills out for a spin with a real API. So you'll see similar APIs out there. For PayPal has a neat one. I've written code myself that essentially is my own internal billing system so that with a few clicks I can bill credit cards and I can pay people via PayPal's API, which is very similar in spirit to what Amazon does, though the latter is for books and so forth. eBay has a similar API via which you can interface with their auctions and with their listings. So there's some really cool stuff out there, and web services ultimately are a really neat way of large websites providing third-party developers with a fairly standard way of interfacing with them, one in which is standardized around an open standard web services, as opposed to having developers download a header file and a DLL that they can then write, you know, language-specific code on their own machines for. So it's really neat stuff, but you need to have this so-called subscription ID in order to make use of it, and just in case Amazon takes 48 hours, 72 hours to actually email you back your subscription ID, best to do it now before you even understand it than to wait till the last minute. So, with that said, page 1 you should do, getting specifically what problem 11 prescribes. Question 1 on page 3 is just chatty and you should read. Question 2 is also readable. Question 4 is perhaps the scariest page of footnotes you've ever seen, but it's meant to help you get up and running on your own Windows or Linux box if need be. Goes on for a while. Question 3 you should certainly read, and question 3 is the official code walkthrough essentially of the project, and it draws your attention to the salient files and the best starting points when it comes to understanding what the project is about in terms of its code. Question 4 you should be able to do now that you know both DTD and schema. Question 5 you can do as well. Question 6 you can do. Questions 7 and 8 you can do. And you may then pause your efforts for a week on questions 9 and beyond. You don't need to feel comfortable with questions 9 or beyond until after next week's web services lecture. And I would advise that because the integration with the warehouse code is not all that much work, what I think you will find is that you'll want to reserve that last week for playing around with Amazon's web services, because even though I provided some sample code in the project itself that shows you how to interface the code, and I even generated all of the API code from Amazon for you, and it's in the project distribution, Amazon's documentation, like a lot of companies, is, let's say, poor. And so while there's a lot of stuff out there, I will say from personal experience, it's not very easy to wrap your mind around because it's just not straightforward. So that's why we wrote the example code in the first place. So just realize that though ultimately the Amazon stuff is not hard, part of that experience is about grappling on your own with what's official third-party documentation and getting your own code up and working with that API, and it's not something you want to do in a night. Not because it requires a lot of code, but because wrapping your mind around their documentation is sort of unfortunately part of the challenge. So try mentally to reserve all of that last week for questions 9 and beyond, and I think then you'll be happier with the experience because you'll be able to focus on it. So, but the upside, though, is that questions 8 and earlier really don't have new material. I mean, yeah, it asks you to write some DTDs and schemas, but frankly, that's kind of the easy part. And in fact, the schemas and DTDs are not officially used in the project. None of Project 4's code will actually validate any of the XML content against those DTDs or schemas. They're meant more as an intellectual exercise to reinforce the stuff we've talked about in lectures so that you know how to write it, but you're never going to turn on the switch in Scamazon and actually use those files. Think of them more as like paper and pencil questions, not components of the project. It's the cart and it's the catalog in questions 7 and 8 that are the meat of this part of the project. Okay. Any questions on the broad overview of the project? Okay.
So question more on the number 7, or, you know, implementing the catalog.
Okay.
What is the better way? I know we did this before in my Wahoo, but what is the better way to combine two XML files, like two distinct things, like information about a user and information from the catalog, into one XML thing?
So it's a really good question. We have placed an emphasis on using style sheets for a lot of the transformations. Realize, first of all, that there are other ways to do this. For instance, what we'll use ever so slightly in this project is some JSTL, Java Standard Tag Library, which is a way of using JSPs more heavily to actually process your XSLT, rather, to process XML by doing it more on the servlet side rather than the XSLT side. That was simply a design choice where we paid most of our attention. As I said in a footnote in Project 3, the suggestion we had in Project 3 of dynamically generating a string and then passing that XML string to the style sheet for processing, that is a hack. And it was meant really just to take your, allow you to focus your time on other aspects of the project. It's not, I would say, the recommended way. One of the standard ways to integrate XML content from two sources is perhaps to parse both with DOM parsers and then to merge the two trees together. And so I believe in an email to the listserv, I actually pasted some sample code that showed an alternative to applying a style sheet to empty content, because recall we had that dummy.xml file. That too was meant to illustrate how you apply a style sheet to a file on disk, even though it was empty. The code I believe I put in the email said, here's how you create an empty DOM and do things a little more intelligently. So one way to merge two documents would be run them both through a document builder and then create a third DOM, really, that has two children, which are those document nodes, and rather aren't the document nodes, but rather are the root elements. Because you can't have document nodes as children of document nodes. It is. I think a even better alternative is to take the emphasis, frankly, off of XSLT and do more of the processing in Java code, and then actually to pass some of the resulting data in the form of an object, like a user object and a catalog object, to a JSP file for processing. So there are different ways to do it. The ones that I think are easiest are the less elegant, the more inefficient ways for now. But a good question.
Have you provided any examples to do that?
The spec, there, you don't need to do things in any fashion more complicated or more elegant than the spec prescribes. And in fact, the sample code is laid out in a way that really gets the job done in the simplest way possible, though not necessarily in, I think, the best way possible. So the short answer is yes, it's all there, and you don't need to overthink what we've provided you with unless you want to, say, rip things out and do things in a fundamentally different approach. Project 4 is meant, it really parallels the design of Project 3 to give you more opportunities to experiment with some of those ideas, spend more time with the session and implementing sort of from scratch the notion of a catalog and the cart, and then it also adds web services. So we didn't want to change the playground more than we had to. So with that said, the first and perhaps easiest thing to do with Project 4 is the one-time modification of server.xml. So recall that in server.xml, there's only two things that you need to change to get yourself up and running, and that's the port values. So again, pick two random port numbers and just remember what they are, at least the latter one is, so that you'll be spawning Tomcat on that port. So just for experimentation, I'm going to go into server.xml just so we can fire this thing up. I am going to choose two port numbers. Nothing else needs to change. I'm going to draw your attention for the moment to the bottom of this file, server.xml, and you'll see where, in the interests of knowing how to do this on your own in the future, I actually specified project-specific stuff. So we look briefly at this sort of thing for Project 3 as well. We have toward the bottom of server.xml a host element, which has some stuff copied from the previous project. And then we've got three different contexts, because in effect we have three different web applications going on here. The root web application is totally uninteresting. It's really meant just for some debugging purposes and so forth, because in the so-called root application, we just have like those JSPs, like happy environment and happy access, just so that you have a way of double-checking that everything is working. The real applications for this project are Scamazon and Warehouse, which, as you can kind of infer from the verboseness of this markup, the Scamazon web application is hosted in the root of your server at /Scamazon. The Warehouse application is hosted in /Warehouse. But realize that even though those are the root of the server from a web browser perspective, these files are actually stored in the web apps directory in Scamazon, WebINF, and so forth. And we'll glance at that a little later. For the most part, though, this is borrowed from last time, so I point this out really so that looking ahead several months, if you decide in the future to use Tomcat or any servlet container like it to configure your own applications, this is one of the files you want to look at to actually get yourself up and running. The other files in the conf directory, Tomcat users and web.xml, you can leave alone. Both of them pretty much just contain default values. Didn't spend much time there. In the root of the project distribution itself are these files. And per my email last night, I actually changed the distribution slightly, not in a way that should impact you, but just to fix the log4j properties issue that some students were having on Windows so that things now work properly. You have these several files, build.xml, a conf directory, a readme file where you'll eventually put some stuff, source directory, temp, and web apps. So a lot of the same structure as you've seen before. And things are designed in this project really to reflect what we think is a good layout for a servlet-based application. Things are arranged in what you can argue is an industry standard approach with the source directory, the temp directory, the web apps. This is pretty standard. This is not really E259 preaching this. It's sample web applications for most any type of container. So with that said, let's glance at web apps, which pretty much has the root directories for our three web applications, which I noted earlier. In the root directory are some debugging tools. Happy Access tells you if your Access installation is working correctly. Access is something we'll spend time on next week. It has to do with web services. Happy Env, which is something you had from Project 3, helps you ensure that your servlet context is set up in the way you expect. This other i18nlib file is used by Happy Access, so you can ignore it. If you click on it, it doesn't do anything interesting. In the webinf directory is a web.xml file, which, just to make clear that the project is not as complicated as the several hundred files suggest, there's nothing really in there. In the docs directory is java.code for all of the source we've provided. So the reason that it's in the root directory here is simply so that when you're developing your project and you run ant javadoc, your own javadoc code gets put in this directory so that you on your own instance of Tomcat can look at it. So this is just meant to be a convenience. So you can look at your own Java doc in your own instance of Tomcat. Again, a sort of debugging tool. The juicy stuff for the project is in the Scamazon directory and in the warehouse directory. So in the Scamazon directory, in the web apps folder, you have what should be a familiar design to you. We try to keep things rather anally laid out in XML directories, XSD, and XSL, and so forth. You will find that the XSD directory and the DTD directory, though they will have files, may have files that you will write or at least fill in the blanks in, they're not going to be used by the project. Again, think of these as the equivalent of questions.xml from a couple projects ago. It's really just meant to put your answers in those directories. But relevant stuff is something like index.jsp, ecs.jsp, the images directory, the XSL directory, and the XML directory. If we look in the XML directory, you'll see catalog.xml. This is Scamazon's catalog. This is what contains all of the stuff that your catalog should allow a user to buy. In the cache directory is a sample of web services requests and responses that we'll look at next week. And that's just meant to give you essentially an insight into what's going on behind the scenes. In the XSL directory are a few different XSL files. One is called catalog.xsl, which, sadly, does very little. But it's in here that you'll really be putting a lot of the guts of your code that generates dynamically a view of the catalog. Okay, you can use parameterization if you want, for instance, to show a subset of items. How you do this is up to you. One of the points of Project 4 is that we try to take the training wheels off with this project, so you're given less. But the type of code you'll be writing is very similar in spirit to what you've already done. It's just we don't hand you as much. But what does exist in profuse comments up top is essentially a little tutorial to save you some headaches as to how to reference directories, because this is just a pain, because not knowing, when you're running Tomcat, going to slash something isn't the same as going to the root of the web apps directory, for instance. So essentially, all these comments help you figure out how to include other XSL files if you want, how to reference JPEGs and GIFs, so that you get the paths correct and you don't see little broken icons all over the place. So that's why those things are there. Cart.xsl is similarly disappointing in that it's a big old to-do. It's cart.xsl that, via cart.java, will display to the user what's in their current shopping cart. And if you're not quite familiar with what we mean by shopping cart, honestly, look at any e-commerce site like Amazon or Borders or whatever. Shopping carts are all over the place, so we would sort of assume that you know what we mean when we say implement a shopping cart and the view thereof. In confirm.xsl, is a file that you can, this is part of questions 9 and beyond, because confirm.xsl handles the generation of a screen that tells the user, yes, your order's been filled via the warehouse, or no, something was backordered. So that will come after next week. And finally, receipt.java will come from next week too, rather, receipt.xsl. This doesn't do much yet, but this will be the style sheet that via some servlet of your design will generate a PDF receipt for the user. And what will be helpful come next week is that actually when we talked about XSLFO a few weeks ago, one of the sample pieces of code in the lecture distribution that we didn't spend time on, but I said this might prove useful in the future, is a nice template for generating receipts. You can come up with the ugliest and the simplest of receipts, that's fine, but if you actually want to dive a bit more into XSLFO and know how to do a little table and include like the company's logo in it and have a total field and bold facing and really just have a nice looking receipt, look back at that example for guidance. Not that hard, and you'll see some good sample code in there. So, with that said, most of these XSL files are deployed by way of the various Java files in the source directory. It's not worth spending much time on the warehouse just now, because again, that'll come in after next week, but for now, know that the warehouse is the part that will ultimately implement the web services stuff. So we'll come back to that next week. But if we, for now, look at our code, we can go into the source directory, and you'll notice that there's two subdirectories, com and CSCIE259. When I said earlier I dynamically generated the Amazon API for you, I mean that I dynamically generated these 149 files. So when you use Amazon's API next week, you'll essentially be using these Java classes, which, believe it or not, were all dynamically generated. All of this Java code, which for those of you playing along at home, the screen is flashing quickly, all of the code in these files, all of this code was dynamically generated based on what's called a WSDL file, Web Services Description Language. And this is the beauty of web services. What Amazon publishes for the world to use, and you can see the URL in the project spec, is essentially an XML file that describes the methods and the parameters thereto with which you can interface with Amazon servers. I essentially ran that XML file, that WSDL file, through a tool called Axis. And Axis, from Apache, generated all of this Java code. With this Java code, will you then be able to write code that uses Amazon's API? But all of the process of the XML RPC-like marshalling of arguments and shipping it over via HTTP and getting a response back, all of the stuff that happened, for instance, a few weeks ago between Wormboy's server and client is all generated for you automatically. You don't have to write any socket code. You don't have to write any marshalling or demarshalling code. That is the beauty of web services. It's all done for you. So you can just focus on the problem at hand and not on the implementation of the underlying transport mechanism. So with that said, you'll also see an example. ECS.jsp earlier is an example of how to use that API. And when you download or look at Amazon's PDF or HTML documentation, they won't talk about Java methods. They won't talk about parameters to Java methods. They'll talk about the generic notion of an operation called getBook or getISBN. But they describe it in a language-neutral way. Because I could have, with a different tool, generated C++ code, or maybe even Perl code or Python code from that same XML or WSDL file. And that, too, is the beauty of web services. It is not language-specific. You can pretty much choose whatever language you want, provided there exists support for WSDL. So that's a sneak preview that is really meant to wow or overwhelm at how much stuff can be done for you by web services, and it really allows you to focus on the cool part of implementation rather than the nitty-gritty. But for now, your attention can be on the CSCIE directory, which inside of which eventually is a Scamazon directory. And here are the several files we can spend our remaining time on. There's one, a base class, Scamazon Servlet. Think of this as the Wahoo Servlet class. It's essentially a base class that looks like the following. It has a doGet method. It has a doPost method, both of which, for simplicity, map to doWork, which is an E259 trick so that you handle get and posts the same way. You have a redirect and a forward, which are just useful utility functions like before. You have an error listener implemented so that if there's an error, they're actually handled in a standard way. And that is pretty much it. Because the Scamazon servlet is extended by cart and catalog, and I believe receipt. So let's focus on catalog, which is where question 7, I believe, directs your attention first. Cart.java is the servlet that is going to generate via, with the help of catalog.java, with the help of catalog.xsl, is the servlet that is going to generate the dynamic view of whatever the catalog.xml contains. So this is similar in spirit to what in Project 3 was the view servlet, as I recall. Or let's say we had the view servlet and we had what else?
The prefs
and the login. So this is the analog of the view servlet. So with that said, we have this doWork method currently, which, very similar to Project 3, goes ahead and grabs the file called in line 86, give or take, catalog.xsl, and ultimately applies that to catalog.xml in line 130 or so, give or take. What the previous lines were doing were similar in spirit to what the source code from last week's lecture and tonight's lecture, which we actually didn't look at, but there's only 3 files, sample code, whose execution should be straightforward from the comments atop them, applies XSL, catalog.xsl to catalog.xml, but with the setup so that you can turn validation on or off. But as the project spec explains, though it gives you the ability to turn validation on so that you can check your DTDs and or schemas, we then have you generally turn it off just so that it's not necessary. So if you look, I think it, I forget where in the spec it says, but it will tell you how to turn validation on and off in answer to your question earlier. So in essence, most of the setup for catalog.xml is in catalog.java is in place. Where you need to focus your attention or can focus your attention is on catalog.xsl, the actual dynamic generation of the thing. The cart servlet, I'm afraid, leaves much to be desired. That's it. So cart.java is actually more the more fun one, right? The other one is really just very similar to project 3, just get the job done, get the catalog out in a nice pretty fashion, with the additional trick that catalog.xml does have some hierarchy, like I said, different sizes, baseball bats and baseballs and jerseys, so actually showing that in a user-friendly way is sort of an interesting design decision in and of itself, but it's just a display of data. Cart is actually going to have some Java logic. So the idea of Scamazon, in essence, is like similar to Amazon, and we can actually do this as an analog. If I go to the real Amazon.com, for the sake of discussion, and I search for XSLT, just so that we can talk about an XSLT book. All right, there we go. Michael Kay's book pops up as number one. Think of what you're seeing now. Those of you playing along at home, all I did was search for keyword XSLT on Amazon, and I got back a page of hits. Think of this, in effect, as the catalog, the output of catalog.xsl. Ignore the search feature because you're not searching in this, but think of this as the entirety of catalog.xml being displayed. When you finally click on one of Scamazon's items, you'll want to be able to add that item to the shopping cart. So the analog here, an Amazon site's more complicated than Scamazon's site will be, but when I click on add to shopping cart on Amazon's site, think of that link in the project linking to cart.java. So when I click add to shopping cart, the response is going in our world to cart.java, and what just happened quickly on the screen, the addition of that book to the shopping cart, is what your cart.java needs to implement. So on a high level, what you need to do is, one, in your catalog, be generating some kind of link called add to cart, or the equivalent, so that the user can click a link. That's got to send via get or post some kind of input to the server, like product equals 1234, where 1234 is the product number, something like that. It's up to you to decide what to do, to cart.java. Cart.java is probably then going to grab those parameters in a fashion like you did with Project 3, getting various user inputs from the HTML forms, and it's going to check, oh, this user wants product 1234. Maybe you'll double check that that's a valid product. Maybe you'll then instantiate an item object and do something with it, maybe specify what size item the user wanted or what quantity the user wanted, and then add that item element to the session, for instance. And how you store it in the session is entirely up to you. You could implement a class called shopping cart and add to the session a shopping cart, and then subsequently add to the shopping cart in the session these item elements. Or you could just add to the session like a hash table or a linked list or an array or whatever, and then just keep adding to that data structure each of the items the user is purchasing. In short, it's entirely up to you, whatever you think is best. Bearing in mind that ultimately, come next week, you're going to need to be able to iterate over the elements in the shopping cart, generate a purchase order string, as I think question 9 or 10 explains, because that string is going to be sent, and this is appropriate, sending an XML string to the warehouse, which is then going to reply with its own XML string for you to parse as the response. You're also going to want to be able to make use of this session-based shopping cart so that when the user clicks on the link as prescribed to view their shopping cart, you need to be able in HTML to show them that. And you're going to do that via cart.xsl. So you're probably going to pass to cart.xsl maybe some DOM that contains the requisite information to show the user what's in their shopping cart. Maybe it's just an XML fragment that, like Project 3, you'll whip up quick and dirtily and just pass to the style sheet. That, too, is up to you. But in short, the nice part about the project is that in concept, it's all pretty simple, right? Display a catalog, allow the user to add things to their shopping cart, remove, allow them to check out, and that's it. With the addition of then later integrating Amazon's web service into it. But that you can tuck away for later. But it is quite feasible within a week to have working the framework of a project that does that. Shows the catalog, allows the user to add stuff to their cart, but that's it. Not until next week do you need to actually do stuff with what's in the shopping cart and actually fulfill those orders. And there's some fun, interesting, necessary design decisions along the way.
We have to allow the user to be able to take things out of the cart.
Absolutely. And that should be one of the bulleted items, the subscript items in the spec for problem 7 or 8. In short, it should work as you would hope any shopping cart would. It doesn't have to be sexy, but it should have minimum functionality as we specify. Questions?
How extensively used are these web services from Amazon and eBay and these other places right now?
Via other people? Mm-hmm. Amazon's, I believe, are fairly well used. I believe eBay's are too, but I've never had occasion to use them myself. PayPal's in a sense is eBay's these days. PayPal's is great. Actually, the capabilities provided by PayPal's web service is great. The implementation of their web service is awful. Like, the documentation is horrible and their service is horrible. I mean, sort of case in point, I say this, you know, it's a mixed blessing. It works wonderfully when it works, but getting it to work is non-trivial. For instance, PayPal's WSDL file, as I alluded to earlier, is essentially a description of what operations you can use with their web service. They have hard-coded into that file the default timeout value so that when you call one of the dynamically generated Java methods to, for instance, charge someone's credit card, their WSDL file has a default timeout value of 5 seconds so that if the request is not responded to within 5 seconds, the method returns null or whatever. Problematic when you want it to work. And problematic, too, when PayPal's own servers are so generally overloaded that 5 seconds in general is not sufficient. Nowhere in their documentation do they tell you where to fix this, and only by looking through dynamically generated code can you find where to change this value from 5 to 30 seconds. Case in point, wonderful when it works, but getting it to work is non-trivial. So in answer to your question, I don't know numbers, but I know Amazon's web service is fairly commonly used, and I think web services in general are becoming increasingly commonly used because of the flexibility and the power that they provide. And it's not hard to imagine, I mean, Google allows certain interfaces to, like their map service, and I don't know how maps is implemented, but you could certainly implement it as a web service. Are there questions or comments? Yeah. No, so my point there is that there's really no reason to constantly reparse catalog.xml because it's not changing. So you could parse it once with like a document builder and then store away in a class variable the root of that document. And then subsequently, if you want to apply catalog.xsl to catalog.xml, you don't need to apply it to the XML file. You can apply it to that DOM, which has already been parsed, which would be a sort of performance optimization because catalog.xml is not changing. The cart content is, but the catalog's not. But that's not required.
That's what I was wondering. Or if it was, just wondering if it was okay to just parse catalog.
Yes. Yes, no, that's fine. As it is, the catalog.java file that we glanced at earlier is set up in such a way that every time you invoke it, catalog.xsl is applied to catalog.xml, which, though inefficient, is simple, it works, and you don't certainly need to change stuff like that.
Keep going to
Mm-hmm. If the cart circlet was expected to, keep things in memory, then you could have like a synchronization policy.
Correct. So the design of the project doesn't allow for those kinds of issues, and a better for data that's not changing, a better solution ultimately would be to have something like a database, for instance, where both of them are drawing from the same sources, and you can then validate before fulfilling an order that that product number is still in the database. Doing that requires more overhead in setting up the projects, which is why we leave it alone with the flat files. So, yes, you would have a persistency problem, but we don't choose to bother with it. But it's a valid concern for larger projects, certainly. Yep.
In the next part of the project, are we going to get to a point where we call out, as we're building the catalog screen, do we call out to the warehouse and say, do you have any of these, and then put them on the catalog screen?
So the question is, later in the project, do you get to check with the check in stock information? Short answer is no. I believe I parenthetically or for brownie points suggest that you could add such functionality and actually check inventory numbers and get back. Actually, I don't mention that for dynamic responses. What the purchasing service is designed to do currently is when you give it a PO to fulfill, it will check its own inventory and then report back what items were fulfilled and which items were backordered. Currently, there's no mechanism in place that would allow you, when viewing the catalog, to tell you in advance what quantities are available. In fact, in the purchasing service, there's no method even that would allow you to just pull for that request. Wouldn't be hard to implement, but it's just not there. Other questions? And so just to be clear, I would advise again that you will feel so much better if you bite off most of the questions 1 through 8 this week, which frankly the hardest part conceptually, or the part less experienced students with the server-side coding might spend time on, would be, I think, the HTML input and deciding what kind of form mechanism you want to use and what it means then to process that request on the server. In the end, you don't need to write much code, but just thinking those issues through, I think, are a good use of this week so that you can focus next week on the web services aspect. All right. Well, why don't we officially adjourn here, and I will stick around for more one-on-one Q&A.